this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey guys, welcome back. We're at one of our favorite breweries. This is Carrollton, Texas, just north of Dallas, still in Dallas County. This is Three Nations Brewing, and we are back, fortunately. I missed the memo today, though.
To wear brown. What's wrong
with
you?
I wish you would have texted me this morning.
You know, we were just talking, too, about, you know, being vigilant and going through your emails and paying attention.
And you just said you bulk erased, what, 1,500 emails because 15, you didn't want to read them?
15,000.
15,000
emails.
That
was like a year ago at work. You know, I've been getting further and further behind. I usually just kind of scan through them every day and see if it looks like anything's important. If it is, I click on it, whatever. But, you know, there's probably stuff I was missing in there. And I was trying to play catch up at the end of the year. Like, I need to clean this thing out, and you know, I tried to be vigilant as I was going through these, and I finally just gave up and just, you know, highlighted like 15,000 emails and just bulk erased them, and thought, you know, if it's somebody who really needs something from me, they will contact me again.
But here,
I mean, these are like boss emails.
That's
you
free,
know?
Right? Well, here's the thing about
it is freeing. It felt great.
You can't contact him again. You can try to call him. It goes immediately to voicemail. I don't know how you'd put it immediately to voicemail like for everybody.
For being a connected guy, I'm
you're
trying to be off the grid as much as I can be.
And you love to use that phrase when you're out of town.
But yet I feel like I'm still like never away from it, you know?
Right. Listen, guys, we have one of our colleagues, Matt Houston, with us today, reporter at WFAA. We're talking about a pretty eye-opening story that he just did. But before we get into this, I want to give Wheeler a quiz here, a Texas quiz. He thinks he's all things Texas, so here we go.
I usually know the answers to these.
Tell me if the name of these towns are real or fake.
Okay.
Real
Let's
or fake?
It. Let's hear it.
Number one, Ding Dong, Texas.
No.
Fake or
no,
real?
Fake.
All right. You're wrong. It's real.
Where
is
that?
Southwest of Fort Worth.
Okay. I love that that's real, actually. I do. I love that it's
Rainbow,
real.
Texas.
I do want to know the story behind Ding Dong, Texas.
Well, Sean Giggy did it. One of our other colleagues did a story on that one.
I believe Rainbow, Texas.
Rainbow, Texas?
Yes.
That is real, too. Mm-hmm. Cut and Shoot.
Cut and Shoot.
You know
is
that
absolutely
one. See, that was a given. That's like Dallas.
As is Gun Barrel City.
Gun Barrel City is another. That's too easy, though. It's very Texas. Cut Hand.
Cut Hand is absolutely correct because that is where our podcast originates.
And that's where
today.
We're starting today with Cut Hand. So that was an easy segue for you.
I got one wrong, though.
I'm disappointed you missed Ding Dong.
Because usually it's not all true. You know what I mean? When you take one of these true-false quizzes, there's always more false than
I'm 100%
true.
Factual, my friend. That's why you need to get ready.
You don't know how to put a quiz together.
You know, Cut Hand is relatively close to both Naples and Paris.
And Bogota.
There's a Bogota, Texas. I didn't know
Which
that.
I don't think they say Bogota like it's supposed to
How
be said. And he said, Bogota.
Bogota.
Do they really?
Because it's Texas.
Well, because it's East Texas.
Correct.
And I can say that as an East Texan. So, but yes.
Wait, where are you from originally?
Tyler,
Texas. Okay so that does count.
This is like Northeast Texas up along like...
This is closer to
between
Texarkana.
Paris and Texarkana is kind of where this is along the Red River, right?
About 2 miles to the northeast of Dallas is what we're... Or not two,
two miles,
miles, 2 hours. 2 hours.
Yeah.
What are you drinking, man? By the way, we missed this.
This is a stout.
I'm
having the Steel Cut Stout today, and it's excellent.
I'm having the Go Time. This is a Hellas, and Matt got
also
the same
a Go
thing.
Time, because we didn't match shirts. I figured
clearly
I needed
not.
To match
we,
you
we
in
got
somewhere.
To connect somewhere, right?
Well, he felt the need to include you since you didn't read the email.
I didn't want to leave you out, right.
So we're talking about water today, not the water necessarily goes into our beer, though they would definitely
it could,
be interested
actually.
In that. But we're talking about water, and this is one of these infrastructure items that nobody thinks about. We all take it for granted.
Yeah.
But we're
you turn on the tap, it comes on.
Yeah, we're in a serious pinch right now in Texas, and you can tell that we're in a serious pinch when Democrats and Republicans together say, listen, we've got to focus on this and figure this out because the state's growing so fast. Sid Miller told us, the Agriculture Commissioner told us, the state's drying up.
Mm-hmm.
Down in the Rio Grande Valley, out in West Texas, there are complete farming industries that are drying up out there. So it's a huge deal.
And it's happening in urban areas, too, of course.
It's happening in urban areas. Then you have, you know, these growing metropolises, Houston, DFW, Austin, San Antonio. Ding Dong, which is part of DFW.
Yeah.
Rainbow's part of DFW.
Ding Dong really is what pushed us over the edge.
Ding Dong just drinking up all the water down there, consuming it all.
Oh, the jokes that could be had.
But we're trying to, you know, lawmakers and state leaders are trying to figure out, what do we do? How do we get more water? And then it always comes to NIMBY.
Yep.
You know?
Not in my
backyard.
Yep.
NIMBY. And that's what we're talking about here today. So Matt Houston's working on a story for WFAA News this week. And he goes up to East Texas to cut hand.
Northeast Texas
to cut hand. And folks there are pretty darn scared that they're going to lose their land because DFW needs some water.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the solutions that's been in different iterations of the state water plan or regional water plans since probably the 50s, maybe the 40s. Mm-hmm. So this is not a new idea. Mm-hmm. And in fact, one of the landowners that we interviewed was telling me how stressful this was for his parents. And he remembers growing up and his dad being stressed about it. And then he said, I think the soundbite was, it wears on you. Mm-hmm. And now I understand what my dad was feeling. So
he's the one worried about it now. He wants to leave this land to his grandchildren and doesn't know if it's going to be there or if it's going to be covered by a lake.
Yeah, if this reservoir, which would be a water supply for Dallas-Fort Worth, is constructed, it would flood all 700 acres or so that he inherited from his great-grandfather down, and then also some on his mother's side. Hmm. So he's got land that's been in his family now. He's the fourth of seven generations that will live on that land or do live on that land currently, and it's all threatened by this project.
Hmm. And just to lay it out, I mean, if this were to happen, and it's happened before in the state, it's happened for every lake almost that exists here in Texas.
Isn't Caddo Lake the only one that's natural?
Caddo's the only natural lake, I believe it is. But if this were to happen, you know, of course, the Belchers, who you interviewed, they would get paid for it. Of course, they don't want to get paid for it. They want the land that they have. So that's the sticking point on this, and it's going to be a lot of people who are affected by it. But on the other hand, if it doesn't happen, it threatens the growth of DFW and the growth of this state. If you turn on the tap and the water's not there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the way it's been described to me is that development ultimately would shut down, that there simply would not be room for further growth. It would be inconvenient and uncomfortable for us initially. And by the way, we're very close to having water shortages now. They're not dramatic water shortages, but a bad drought in 5 years would mean tighter restrictions and we would not be able to meet the supply. We would not be able to meet the demand that we would have. So this is not some, you know, 50 years in the future thing. This is happening now and there need to be immediate solutions. This project, though, would be among some of the long-term ideas.
So you talk about the need for immediate solutions, and I think a lot of us do think that this is somewhere way out on the horizon, and it's not. You spoke with a guy named Kevin Ward, and he had a lot to say about, you know, what's coming if we don't do something. Let's take a quick listen to that.
You're going to see water rights go up. You're going to see reductions of use. You'll probably see restrictions on landscaping. That could affect the economy for businesses like Home Depot, Lowe's, and the garden centers and things like that. So that's your initial effect. Later, what you'll see is growth will slow. Jobs will dry up. You won't have people wanting to move here. You'll see business relocations. You'll see things that you really don't want to see.
So, yeah, you know, it would be far-reaching for us here. And, you know, the thing is that you got to get water from somewhere, and they've now estimated what DFW is going to need. Just DFW alone is going to need five reservoirs just to keep up, new reservoirs just to keep up with what's going on right now. And that doesn't even talk about, you know, more growth that keeps on coming.
Right. It's a cascading problem because the more people you add, obviously your growth is exponential and your demand growth is exponential. And so this is not just, you know, conservation can't alone fix this problem. It should be a part of the solution, but it can't do it by itself, just like new reservoirs can't fix the problem by itself. And I think there, most people on either side of the issue, whether you're for the construction of this reservoir, Marvin Nichols, or not, are all sort of hoping that technology will come in and save the day so that they don't have to make that impossible decision between landowners and people who are moving to DFW who both have rights of their own.
And for scope on this, what's interesting, and you point out in the story that's coming up, is that if this reservoir, the Marvin Nichols Reservoir, were to be created, it would only, you know, stop the part of the need here. 25% is all it would fill for what DFW needs. We're not even talking about Houston and Austin and San Antonio, but this is, you know, back to what Jason said. Five major reservoirs needed over 50 years. These folks in Northeast Texas have been fighting this for a long time. Eddie Belcher is the guy you talked to. Let's listen to some of the things he said here.
you run a pipeline, you still have the land. You know, I know the cost may be a little more, but you're not destroying people's lives. You know, that's my deal. I don't understand. They don't act like they don't care whether you live or die, you know, or have a place to live. You know, they're basically putting you out on the street, you know.
So it's Eddie Belcher. He owns that land in East Texas that Matt's talking about here. You know, one of the things that folks in East Texas say, and you point out in the story rightfully so, is that, listen, DFW has plenty of water.
Yeah.
They're not using it. They're watering their lawns with it. They're washing their cars with it. They're letting it leak out of pipes and old infrastructure. There's things that can be done. They're not wrong about that.
No, they're not. And Kevin Ward, who you heard from earlier, he chairs the Regional Water Planning Committee for Dallas-Fort Worth. So this is a guy who's been very high up in conversations about this. He was also an executive with the Water Development Board at a state level. So he knows, and he would agree that we're not using our reservoirs today the way that we probably should. But then you have to consider, well, the Corps of Engineers operates some of these reservoirs, and then that becomes a federal, state, and local issue. Oh, we have to conserve. Well, Dallas-Fort Worth probably conserves more water than anybody, but we also use more water than anybody. So it's, you know, is it apples to apples? So this, it's not a simple solution, and there I think there's an all-of-the-above approach there. But to your point, Marvin Nichols is maybe accounts for one of the bigger chunks of the ways we could fill the need, but it doesn't solve the problem. It doesn't get us to where we need to go. It's got to be, if it's going to be a solution, it's among them.
So this would be, you know, just to give an idea of scope here, this would be a 77,000 acre, is that right?
67, yeah.
67,000 acre reservoir out there.
Acre feet.
Yes.
No, acres.
No,
it
acres.
Would cover about 67,000 acres. And then the state would also set aside another 130,000 acres around it, and that's for conservation. And they do all that through eminent domain. Just to give people, you know, when you start hearing about, you know, 67,000 acres, you go, okay, that sounds like a great figure. I don't know what that means exactly. I did a little bit of research on that. and Lake Texoma, I think, comes in, where did I put that here? It's great to do the research. It's bad when you can't find it on your piece of paper.
Up top.
Is it up top? Oh, yeah, there we go. Lake Texoma is 89,000 acres. So that gives you an idea. Lake Texoma is a very large lake.
Yeah.
This would be 67,000. For more perspective, Lake Travis near Austin, which seems like a really large lake too, 29,000 acres. So this would be, you know, double the size of what Lake Travis is.
Yeah, and Eddie Belcher makes a good point about this. Yeah, DFW needs the water here, but it's still going to cost livelihoods and you know, potentially things that are passed down.
Homesteads.
Yeah, homesteads and just way of life for folks in East Texas. Listen to this.
You know, and everything you grew up doing and living with and it's just not replaceable. There, you know, you don't find land like this, you know, bottom land and animals, wildlife, you know, it's the, but I can't say you can't replace the family connection. You know, you lose all that. It's just, it all becomes memories. It ain't real life no more.
And so there we hear it. You know, one man's perspective. I would imagine that might not be that uncommon in his neck of the woods out there, Matt. This really does become a, you know, sort of us versus them. We've heard, you know, that you're taking, essentially, you know, quote unquote, taking from the poor and giving to the rich. You're giving to these big cities that have so much. What did you get as far as a sense of the feelings about city dwellers, those city folk, when you were out there?
Well, they certainly feel like this is an urban versus rural issue, more so a rich versus poor issue, a class issue. You know, we are feeding the sort of new money in Texas, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and transplants and people from California or wherever, and we are taking our land to give to them. What's interesting, and I think reflects well on the people in East Texas, is all of them are reasonable about this. There's nobody who would say, I don't want you to have water. I want to help. I want to be a part of the solution. I just don't want to give you my land in the process. All of them would say, we want to be a part of this. We have reservoirs. We have groundwater that maybe we're not using as much. Let us give you that and let us work with you, DFW, to solve this problem. What they would tell you, though, is that the folks in DFW have not been as willing to reciprocate, that this has been sort of a one-sided conversation where they're offering solutions, but the folks in DFW just say, there is no viable solution to this, at least not right now.
So you have this fight that has really set up between regions now,
yes,
where you've got this, you know, more rural Northeast Texas region versus the more urban, suburban, exurban region around North Texas where DFW is located. And all of this has to head to the legislature because they've got to figure out what to do. The clock is running out on this, as you say, and we've got to find solutions. Where are we as far as that fight goes? I mean, we already know that that rural urban divide, that chasm in Texas, really drives a lot of what happens politically. Where does this go at the legislature? They're already looking at this. They're in session now. What happens here?
So the state legislature, ironically, created the Water Development Board so that they wouldn't have to deal with these problems, so that water would not become a political football. And yet here we are, right? And I think we've reached a point where there's a conflict. So you have two regions, Region C and Region D. One of them's East Texas, one of them's DFW. And they are part of the Water Development Board, and their job is to create a water plan for, you know, the next 50 years. Mm-hmm. And most of the time those plans mirror, and occasionally they'll have conflicts, and they have spend time to negotiate the conflicts, resolve those.
They're supposed to work it out amongst
themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then if they can't, they declare an impasse, basically, and send that up to the State Water Board, and sort of the board of directors there will sort of make that top-down decision rather than a bottom-up decision. That's where we are right now, is we are in the process of drafting these initial proposals from these two regions that will eventually be combined into the statewide plan. Almost certainly they're going to declare conflict or an impasse, and the State Water Board will then have to decide. Now that would happen probably later this year after the legislative session concludes. So the idea is that some lawmakers could come in and propose legislation. In fact, my sources are telling me that this is almost certainly going to happen, that there are already draft bills out there to say, you know, in some form or fashion, Marvin Nichols cannot happen. Hmm. And that would be an unusual, though I don't think unprecedented, step. It would be unusual for the legislature to step in and sort of intervene in the regional water planning process, because again, they don't want to get involved in this. I mean, can you imagine if water infrastructure was subject to an appropriations bill every year, yeah, where you're negotiating over pork ultimately, and then, I mean, talk about ugly urban versus rural fights. This was supposed to prevent that, but it's not. So yes, there will almost certainly be legislation filed that seeks to address this, whether it will draw out, you know, land and bar any sort of construction on that land, whether it will reorganize the water board, I don't know.
But you have to wonder, has the train already left the station on this? I mean, if you're looking in from the outside, you see land out there right now, you don't see anything happening, nothing's being cleared, water is not filling it,
right,
and you go, well, it's, you know, perfect time to stop this and look somewhere else, because nothing has actually, you know, happened construction-wise yet.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, this has been talked about for a lot of decades, and so the process is actually pretty far along here,
yeah,
isn't it?
The reason we're talking about this year is because this was a project slated for construction or completion somewhere around 2050. This was included in the State Water Board's 2050 vision.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it would probably take 30 to 40 years to construct, and we're at that sort of next iteration of the State Water Plan, which is a five-year plan. So, like, if construction doesn't start soon, we're going to miss that 2050 deadline.
And you start running into those shortages.
Then you start running into shortages, or your growth is already to a point where this project is just not as viable, or, and this is significant, drought conditions change, and the reservoir would not produce as much water as we initially thought it would.
Mm.
And that's something that Kevin Ward, the former DFW regional planning chair, said, is we're right on that point now where this may not be as viable as we thought it was because of the cost.
Hmm.
You know, it's a ridiculously expensive project.
Like $7
billion? Yeah, between $7 and $8 billion. But when it was first proposed legitimately, it was a $1 billion project,
yeah,
right?
And $7 to $8 still conservative.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So 30 years from now,
sure,
is it $15 billion? Is it $16 billion? And at what point is that no longer cost effective,
right,
for the entities that are going to be selling that water? Because then you're talking about water rates that are increasing beyond a point where you can recoup your money on construction. So that is sort of an interesting thing that came out in our reporting here that I didn't know prior to this, is that there is that conversation and that fear that it may be too late already because this is just getting so expensive that it's not viable. So
They're not there yet. They're not ready to declare that, but they're saying it's getting close to that.
Well, point. If there's not a Marvin Nichols Reservoir, what would there be? I mean, we don't want to talk about climate change, but the climate is changing. We saw snow in New Orleans. We saw the fires, huge fires out in California. What are the other options? Because this is the one that's always been at the very front of the line for decades.
So I mentioned technology earlier, right. And I think that's everyone's hope is that desalination will somehow come in.
That's been talked about for decades.
But that's been talked about as long as
probably before the Marvin Nichols Reservoir. Yeah.
You all know, for example, former Governor Perry has taken an interest in this and perhaps partnering with the Boring Company as a way to sort of drill, produce that water.
Elon Musk company. Mm-hmm.
You're talking about getting water out of the Gulf of America to put in
Yes.
I thought you guys would enjoy that.
I'm not taking the bait on that one.
I thought you guys would.
Don't do it. Step away.
But to fill the taps across the state.
And not just the Gulf of America, but think about, we have oil reservoirs and wells that, water wells, basically, that were drilled for oil productions that are all salty.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that exists in West Texas. It's there. In fact, we've got to figure out ways to plug those wells so that it doesn't ruin the farmland that it's on. So what if we could reuse that water or clean it up, for example, to make it potable? That's, I think, what everyone is sort of hoping is that, hey, we're seeing this exponential growth in, space travel or whatever as a product of private investment. What if somebody comes in and there's a public-private partnership that can do desal? That'd be great, right? I think that would solve a lot of problems. The folks in East Texas, I think, though, are a little more realistic about it and would tell you that there are reservoirs existing right now. The alternative they'll throw out most often is Toledo Bend, which is sort of right on literally the bend of the state and Sabine River with Louisiana down Nacogdoches, Carthage, that area. They think you could build a pipeline from Toledo Bend to DFW. Hmm. Louisiana, Arkansas, they don't have the growth problems we do, right? Their populations are not expanding like ours. So that water really goes unused. Hmm. And it's available for us. It's Texas water because of where it comes from. So if you could build that pipeline all the way from Toledo Bend to Decatur, which is ultimately where this would come out, could you then sort of let that be a part of the solution? Hmm. Challenge with that is it's longer pipes, it's more maintenance, and are you then taking water supply that really is closer to Austin and San Antonio from Austin and San Antonio?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really Central Texas's water.
And that's a big point here, too, because we're talking about, feeding water to DFW, which is just getting thirstier and thirstier with all the growth. But Austin, San Antonio, Houston, also developing like crazy. And, especially if you look at, projections for decades ahead here, this is a fight that's going on right now between Northeast Texas and North Texas. We're going to see this fight play out all over this state.
Absolutely. And I would think this is probably one of the first examples of that. I mean, I recognize that like Bodark, for example, is a reservoir, similar things happened. But this fight and the magnitude and the level it's reached where you have state lawmakers, federal lawmakers weighing in on this and taking sides, this is not the first time we're going to see this.
Mm. So let me go back to, you were talking about your sources are saying that the legislature, there might be bills being drafted that would protect this farmland up there. Is that what you're hearing, that there may be some that would stop that?
That there are absolutely, there's going to be some sort of debate. What that debate looks like and what the solutions might be, I don't know.
So lawmakers haven't said what the other options might be. Don't do Marvin Nichols, we can do something else.
To my knowledge, lawmakers have not proposed any alternatives at this point, which is, again, not really in their purview. That's the State Water Board's job, which is when you get into that mess of like, well, it's not my responsibility to come up with the alternatives, but I'm going to step in and prevent you from doing the thing that's been in your water plan for 50 years. Yeah. So it's that complicated sort of, really the legislature almost created a second legislature for water projects.
Yeah, and you hand have off problems. The dirty stuff.
Right.
Exactly.
Y'all go fix that and let us know what you decide.
We'll establish a committee, a blue ribbon committee. Let's figure it out.
And then we'll continue fighting over it and not really do anything. They're going to hear a lot from loggers here, sawmills out that way too, because this isn't just landowners who are talking about property rights and their way of life.
Right.
This is a livelihood and businesses for a lot of folks too.
So people know there are pine trees in East Texas. Mm-hmm. The further north,
piney woods.
Yeah, right. The life behind the pine curtain. The further north you go, the more hardwood, the more oak trees you see. And this floodplain or basin in the Sulphur River is designated ecologically as a bottomland hardwood forest. Mm-hmm. Really, that just means it's almost a swamp, but not quite there yet. sawmills in East Texas need both pine trees and oak trees to make their money. The sawmill we visited for this story, its number one export, if you will, is railroad ties.
Wow.
Railroad ties are huge pieces of wood. You wouldn't want to run a train over pine trees. It's softwood. It would crack. So if you take off, you know, 70,000 acres of potentially forest land, another 130 that you can't cut down trees on anymore, you pull so much land out of rotation that these sawmills can no longer plant more than they cut. And this isn't them being environmentally friendly, although it is. This is them building a sustainable business model where they don't run out of supply. You've got to have more wood than you cut down,
so
otherwise
they get
you're
it?
Buying it.
Yeah.
You buy it. And so that's the solution for bigger sawmills, relatively, like the one we talked to. They would transition to more pine that they're cutting and then buy hardwood from other parts of the state, which would create bidding wars because you're introducing more competition in that market. And they already buy some wood, but we're talking about a lot more. And then costs go up. And not only for them, but, you know, this affects everything from construction to railroads to diapers to paper towels. I don't know that this single project is going to just dramatically inflate costs for average consumers all over the country. I'm not an economist. I can speculate, though, that people would lose their jobs in East Texas.
Wow. So when you talk about a way of life out there, just kind of give us a sense. You know, when you've been out of there a couple of times now. They're talking about damming the Sulphur River, which comes from the Red River and eventually drains down into the Gulf of Mexico. That's what the maps still say. Drain down into the Gulf of Mexico. They're talking about capturing that water from the Sulphur River and turning it into this enormous reservoir out there. Describe the landscape out there when you head out. I mean, what's it look like? Most people have never, you know, probably, you know, ventured out that
way.
Yeah,
so Eddie Belcher's farm is a great example of this, where there's trees everywhere. The deer wander around in his front yard. He feeds the deer. I mean, people do that all over the state, but it's fascinating to see them come from, you know, hundreds of yards away, and you can watch them through the
woods.
Out
of the thicket, they just
exactly
appear.
You can hear the river, you know, when you get relatively close to his property. It's beautiful. It's calm. The only noise in that area is what Eddie produces or what wildlife produces. The other thing that's interesting is that, you know, there are Indian mounds on Eddie's property. And you drive by him, and his great-grandfather or grandfather cut a road basically between two farms 100 years ago. And that road, it's just hills. And every one of them is a mound.
Each of those hills are mounds,
every
which
one
are burial grounds for the Native Americans.
Every one of them. And so you're not only talking about history in the last century, right? You're talking about all of this stuff that would be underwater.
Millennia.
And he would tell you, you know, it's arrowheads and pottery.
But why
haven't
we heard from Native Americans on this? Because
it's a good question.
It's just been the East Texans who have been, you know, sounding the alarm on this for years and years. But I didn't realize the Indian mounds were there.
That's a great question, and I don't know the answer to that, but I didn't know that when I went out there, and he points at those hills, and I'm sitting there going, man, you would think in some way that would be protected.
Sure.
So maybe that is, I don't know, and maybe that's some solution out here, but to my knowledge, there's not been a push from any of the, you know, the tribes up there that would do
it. And obviously this took some visionaries, but when you see this river, the Sulphur River, is it impressive? I mean, do you look at it and go, yeah, I can see how that could just fill everything up out here?
I don't know if impressive is the word I would use. I mean, it's dirty.
What is the word
you'd
use?
It's muddy. You know, the Sulphur River, like you said, it ultimately flows into the Gulf. And
is it yellowish? Because Sulphur River, it makes you think.
You know, I don't know why we call it sulfur in that area. Sulphur Springs is sulfur. I don't know. Maybe.
Surprise, no. Wheeler doesn't know.
Did you smell eggs?
No, I did not smell eggs. There was no natural gas leak or anything nearby. But no, it's brown. You know, while we were out getting video of the river, the guys boating on it, you know, fishing, that sort of thing. I think these are people who, in this part of Northeast Texas, are working at timber mills. They're doing manual labor jobs, and they get off of work. You know, they come in at 5 a.m. and they leave at 3, and then they go fish for a couple hours and then come home to their families.
And nice life.
Yeah, I mean, it's simple, right? But it's desirably simple.
Yeah, sure.
And I think, you know, I don't know if I would call the Sulphur River scenic, But man, it has a purpose, and there's a lot of history there. And obviously, people who settled there a millennia ago because it was a water supply that ultimately fed into the Red River. So yeah, I mean, it's...
And now everybody wants that water
everybody
supply.
Wants it. I mean, obviously, it has some value because that's what we're seeking. But it's just nobody's using it right now.
Has anybody noticed or researched whether the Sulphur River is drying up itself? You kind of hinted at that a moment ago with climate change. But is it flowing less than it did 100 years ago?
The drought conditions have changed, so, you know, yes. I mean, the supply is limited, but I wouldn't say it's drying up. I think it's just the drought standards are how they measure the economic viability of a certain project based on what a reservoir would produce.
Right.
So I don't think it's at risk of drying up, but it just might not have as much water as it did 100 years ago to feed the number of people here that we expect. I guess on a macro scale, yeah, if it's running lower, then eventually it will dry up. But I think we're talking hundreds of years before
so
that happens.
What should we be watching for then, Matt, in the coming months here? What are you watching for?
Well, legislative action first. I mean, any bills...
Do you think
bills,
the legislature might actually take action on this?
I don't know if they will actually take action, but there will be some sort of debate.
Okay, the legislature gets out of June right. 2nd, I think, is when the legislature's out.
The water plan, you know, they probably need some sort of resolution on that by October, because they're, in theory, they're completing the 5-year water plan, really need to have done by the end of the year so that they can present it to the legislature in a special committee like next year. That's sort of the immediate conflict, although I don't think there's a lot of suspense in what's going to happen there. There's going to be a conflict, and then it will be on the State Water Board. I would assume there will be lawsuits after that. If it appears in the State Water Plan and is ultimately adopted as the intent, I suspect there will be lawsuits of some kind.
Which would drag this out even longer.
Right. Huh? And there's some strategy in that, because I think, again, everyone's kind of hoping that technology saves the day. And we know we're probably relatively close to having viable desalination technology on a grand scheme of things. So what if we delay it 10 years? You know, what if we delay it 20 years? Then what?
In the meantime, these folks out in Northeast Texas who are worried about losing their land, they don't even know for sure yet. I mean, it's not like you go out there and there's, you know, some stakes in the ground and some tape that kind of right. runs that shows you where this is going to be. They don't know. Is my land in or is it out?
Yeah. They've got a pretty good idea of where the actual reservoir will be. But there's the conservation land, 130,000 acres. And really, in theory, that could go just about anywhere in the state. But the Corps of Engineers is in charge of that. And generally, they're going to put conservation land as close to the project as they can because it is ecologically similar. That's their goal. And so I think everyone's assumption is that this will be 200,000 acres. But we don't know if that's on the south side of the reservoir, the north side, if it surrounds it, it's nearby but not adjacent to it. And that's what's really, I think, terrifying to a lot of those people is it's like, you know, the timber industry, the homeowners. I mean, you know, Mount Pleasant is like 20,000 people. What if it extends far down to Mount Pleasant? I mean, those are the conversations that they're having right now. And it's why one of the chief reasons that so many local policymakers, county judges, county commissioners have unanimously opposed this. I mean, I don't think there's anybody in Northeast Texas that is for the program that's an elected official.
Yeah. In the meantime, something's going to have to get done. We're to that point now. The comptroller's office, Glenn Hagar, estimated that Texas would lose 785,000 jobs and $138 billion in lost income by the end of this decade if water supplies ran short. So we're talking about big money, big jobs. That's going to move something in Austin. So we'll have to see what happens here in these months ahead during this legislative session. As we close out, Whiteley,
yeah.
You started us off with trivia.
Yeah, I have another question for you, too, another trivia
question. Well, I've got one for you first. We've been talking about this reservoir. Mm. What's the name of it again?
Marvin Nichols.
Who is he?
Oh, I was going to ask you that question.
Dang it.
Because he is a water engineer.
I hate when
he
you know
He was a water
things.
Engineer, and I was going to ask you because I thought I would stump you on
okay.
that.
Okay. What else? What other claim to fame does he have?
He was a Capricorn with a bad moon rising. I don't know.
He was the first chairman
yeah?
of the Texas Water Development Board back in 1950.
There's some significance to that because the people in East Texas, the engineering firm behind this is Freeze and Nichols. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason, like Marvin Nichols is named for this, and Freeze and Nichols was selected for the project. So when they say there's so much money in this that people can't let it go. This is what they're talking about, right?
That's not a popular name in Northeast
I don't
Texas.
Think so.
You don't
want to
have the last name Nichols, though, I guess, right?
Yeah, because I mean, it says here, he basically proposed construction of 67 dams and reservoirs and redistribution of surplus East Texas water to the drier West. So, yeah, in East Texas, that name is those are fighting words.
Yeah, but you know what? We're probably glad that he did propose what he proposed, because there'd be a lot of people in West Texas who would be SOL without it.
You know? But something's going to happen on this. That's what people have got to realize, is that we're at the crunch time on this, as you said, where something is going to happen, whether it's desal in the Gulf or whether it's Marvin Nichols. But both of these are just temporary plugs for the demand that's needed.
Yeah, and I think the overall vision that regionally we're offering in DFW is Marvin Nichols is the first of many steps.
Sure.
That if you build the pipeline from Decatur to Northeast Texas, then eventually there will be another reservoir that has to come.
Right.
And that infrastructure exists, and so you don't have to go as far from Decatur all the way to Texarkana. Mm-hmm. You can connect at Marvin Nichols and then connect and meet in the middle. That's their vision. But remember that we're sitting here talking about all the controversy around Marvin Nichols, and yet water developers are thinking, well, three projects ahead. Mm. Imagine what those fights are going to be like.
Yeah. So, three more episodes. Matt, thanks for coming in, man. I really appreciate it. When can people watch this story?
So this will air Monday night on Channel 8, and obviously it'll be online after that.
Excellent. WFAA.com is where you can watch it.
If you're in a different part of the state, by the way, you can still watch this, because, again, this fight is probably coming to your neck of the woods as well. We've got all of these stories. They're going to be cataloged at WFAA.com/Boomtown.
That's it.
That's where they are. Thanks for pointing that out. I didn't realize that. I thought it was Yolitics.
I should have made that a trivia question.
You should have started with that.
Jeez.
Thanks for watching, guys. We appreciate it. And special thanks to Three Nations for having us back out again, too. Always love coming here in Carrollton. Take care.
The stout is excellent.
Hey, guys, there is a short postscript to this podcast. A pretty significant development happened just right after we sat down and recorded this episode with Matt Houston the other day. We interviewed State Senator Charles Perry for our television program called Inside Texas Politics. Perry is a Republican. He is from Lubbock. He is the go-to guy for all things water in the Texas Senate. He's chairman of the Water, Agriculture, and Rural Affairs Committee. He's been that for a decade now. He's the expert there in the legislature when it comes to water. Maybe one of the biggest advocates in the legislature as well when it comes to planning for future water supply all across the state, not just North Texas or Northeast Texas, but all the way down to the Rio Grande Valley and beyond. So I asked Senator Perry about the Marvin Nichols Reservoir that we were talking to Matt Houston about there. Since the legislature is in Austin right now, would lawmakers maybe consider a solution to this long, ongoing saga here? Listen to what he told us, because Perry, right here in just a moment, is the first state official, to our knowledge, to reveal that they might be moving on from the Marvin Nichols Reservoir and looking for a new water source. In fact, they have a new water source. Listen here to what the senator told us. Senator, for decades, there's been talk about creating a brand new reservoir in Northeast Texas called the Marvin Nichols Reservoir. I'm sure you're familiar with that, to provide water for Dallas-Fort Worth. Folks there have been fighting it for decades. Do you expect the legislature is going to address that this session, though?
Well, we can't fix the battle that's going on there. I call that particular reservoir eminent domain purgatory. It might happen. I know for a fact, with confidence, it's not going to happen in the next 10 or 15 or 20 years. And I know that that region needs water sooner than that. If we're able to vote this plan in and we get that constitutional amendment in November, this can be an alternative to Marvin Nichols for that region. It literally produces more water through this particular plan than what Marvin Nichols would give you. Now, I'm not advocating against Marvin Nichols. I'm not advocating for. I'm saying that regional market water marketers or wholesalers in Dallas area, Tarrant County for that matter, all the way over to west and going up, will have an alternative to a Marvin Nichols reservoir if we're able to vote this plan across the line in November.
And to make sure I'm clear, this plan, what is the alternative it would include that could be an option for North Texas?
It will literally bring in about 1.1 million acre feet to be distributed through three pipelines, specifically Tarrant County, Dallas, moving over to Wichita Falls and up, where there's another reservoir in conversations, there'll be a 330,000 acre feet pipeline moving that per year.
And where will it come from?
Just, it's in conversations with some other folks. So I'm not at a point where I can name where that source is going to be, but it's truly new supply, no different than a bottled up reservoir would offer you. So, and my basic understanding is firm commitment from Marvin Nichols is about 290,000 acre feet a year. This would be you about 330.
At what point do you think you'll be able to reveal the alternative that could provide for Dallas, Fort Worth, Wichita Falls?
I think probably by the end of February, mid-March, my counterparts in other places are having the same conversations we're having about possibly purchasing water. All the political fronts look good. That's the stars are aligned. And here's the nice thing. We are competing with someone's property, and we're not competing with someone's water right. It's a really nice setup for us. And Texas needs to be very aggressive in getting access to any and all water that they can take on.
Senator, thanks for the time. Good luck to you. We appreciate it. Sure.
No, it's good. It's going to be a good session.
Senator Perry bringing a significant development to this ongoing story here, but it is not over. We'll be watching to see over the next 4 to 6 weeks exactly what this new water source is, where it is when Senator Perry reveals it, something we're all going to want to keep an eye on because it's going to not only affect the Metroplex, it'll affect Northeast Texas, Wichita Falls, and potentially other major metropolitan areas in this state. If some of the pressure is taking off of the water supply for DFW, that might be helping other places in the state. A lot going on, and the Texas miracle is at stake here. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.